Both offenses are unstoppable, so how will the Chiefs-Rams game be decided? Is Houston about to go on a big second-half run? Who has the better defense, Vikings or Bears? And it seems like the Jaguars are getting Pittsburgh at the wrong time. Week 11 is going to be a big one, and we're breaking it down on the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Manoit. And you know, Andy, everyone's going to be rightfully so focusing on this Monday nighter, the Rams-Chiefs game, which is back in America, playing it in L.A. This is an underrated slate of games. We had a tough time paring this down into, I think we're going to run through four games in this one.
Yeah, I think the games we picked, though, are clearly the best games. I think it's kind of a top-heavy. You know how I feel. Every NFL game's a quality game. I watch every single one of them and love them all. But I think it's kind of a top-heavy slate of games this week. I really like that Sunday nighter, that Vikings-Bears. And I like Bears night games at Soldier Field on national TV.
Yeah.
Well, partly because I can get out of watching some of the film. And the Soldier Field film is the bane of everyone around the NFL. The camera angle's horrific.
I was trying to figure out how it would be connected to that, because anytime you say Soldier Field, it's about the long grass or it's about the camera angles on the coach's film. That is all you need to know about the NFL. But let's get into it here. The Monday nighter, Rams, Chiefs, they're back from Mexico City because of the field conditions. They will play it in Los Angeles. It is a true home game for the Los Angeles Rams. Let's talk about the offenses, though, and let's talk about the Rams offense first, because, you know, we talked about the absence of Cooper Kupp a little bit on the Monday show. You can go back in your feed and listen to that, but this would seem to be a nightmare matchup for this Chiefs defense, a team that can run the ball this well out of three receiver sets.
Yeah, great point, because the Chiefs will play their lighter dime defense most likely. Now, it's a better dime defense on paper than it has been, because they have Daniel Sorensen back, and he's their stack linebacker in dime. And then Dorian O'Daniel, their mid-round rookie, who's really athletic, and he's coming along and getting more and more playing time. So it's a different dime defense than we saw early in the season. I also think Alan Bailey at defensive line has had two outstanding games the last couple weeks, and he's always been a guy who flashes but doesn't quite shine. I think maybe he's starting to shine. When he plays well, it's a different looking defense. But all that said, Gary, I think you're right on. There's not a lot of reason for optimism here. The question is, will the Rams stick with the run? McVay, if you have a criticism of him, I think at times he gets a tad impatient with the pass when he feels like it has to be an offensive game. He did that in the wild card game last year against Atlanta. I'm not forecasting that, but I think this game's going to be high 30s, low 40s, and it'll probably come down in that case then to explosive passes, which for these teams, especially the Rams, those explosive passes come off of the running game looks.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, and we'll get into this with the Rams defense versus the Chiefs offense in a moment, but do you think the Chiefs can basically, they've gone more conservative, can they sit back here and basically, like we talked about on the Monday show, or how Wade Phillips has that defense, and he's kind of, you know, no one wants to give up big plays in the run game, but he's kind of conceding the run game to a bit. Can the Chiefs do that and try and make the Rams put together some long drives here and sort of, I mean, is this really their only hope at this point?
Are you asking, is there only hope to give up a lot of rushing yards and make the scores come gradually rather than in quick strikes?
That is correct.
It's not as crazy as it sounds. What would you want to do if you're a D coordinator? Would you want to force an offense like this to mount a long drive? I'm not quite sure why you would, because that would keep your own offense off the field.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is a hard one to it's a hard one. You know what I think this comes down to? And this is where I'm optimistic for both of these defenses, the Rams and Chiefs. Someone's going to make a big explosive play on defense, just like last week with Dante Fowler on that strip fumble where he got by Dwayne Brown, who's been a very good left tackle for Seattle this year, by the way. That kind of play, that was a huge play in that game. It swung the score in the field position when those two teams have been going back and forth. You have potential for that here. Kansas City's a little weak along the interior offensive line, especially with Mitch Morse. He's been out at center the last few weeks. Those guys have played well. Cam Irving and and Blythe in there. They've played Blythe is the Rams guard, excuse me. Ryder, the center for the Chiefs. They've played well enough. But Donald and Sue, you like that matchup. And then for the Chiefs, Dee Ford and Justin Houston, that's the X factor there. Who can get the sack fumble? Who can force the errant ball that can maybe get intercepted?
Yeah, and obviously game flow plays into all of this as well if someone gets a sort of a splash play early. Well, let's talk about the Chiefs offense real quick. They had, I don't want to say they had protection issues last week against the Cardinals, but relative to what they've done so far this year, there was a little more pressure on Patrick Mahomes than there has been the early part of the season. I mean, is there anything that you can look at and say, well, maybe the Rams, those two interior guys, plus Dante Fowler plays up to his potential in this game. Can they give the Chiefs some problems?
Donald's going to give everybody problems every week.
Yeah.
He's the best defensive player in football, and you just live with that. I've had coaches tell me you understand going in, you're going to have about three or four really bad plays against you by Aaron Donald. He's going to get you three or four times, and you have to survive those and play the other 65 snaps. So that's what that will be. Patrick Mahomes, Gary, is so – I trust him so much in the pocket. I think if you would have asked me, even at the front of the year when we were seeing he's still young, but an even younger Mahomes, a totally inexperienced Mahomes, and he was lighting it up, you say, well, let's see how he does. Will he continue to trust the designs and stay within the pocket? Because that's how you stabilize an offense, even if your protection is not holding up particularly well. You don't stabilize by running around and hoping something happens, which Mahomes is more than capable of making something happen when he does that. But he still has the discipline to play on schedule. So that really encourages me. I think the Chiefs have the ability to weather a lot of storms because of that. And they also can have a controlled passing game because Kareem Hunt and Travis Kelce give them that dimension on screens.
All right, it's going to be a good one Monday night. We have some Sunday games as well, though. And Andy, this is going to be one of my favorite games of the week, although I just don't know what angle we want to attack this as. This is Washington and Houston. Houston going to D.C. in this one. Both these teams, you can look at them and say, boy, they're sure winning by the skin of their teeth here. I mean, these are teams that, they've had a couple of games that could swing one way or another on fumbles and things like that. They're both kind of doing it in different ways, though. As we talked about last week, Washington still has not, or excuse me, on the Monday show, Washington still has not had a lead change in a game this year. Houston is more explosive than this Redskins team, offensively certainly. But I was just crunching the numbers. I was touting my Texans numbers on the Monday show, and I keep a chart of red zone performance because I do think red zone a lot of luck plays into it. Typically, yes, the Patriots are good, the Saints are good, stuff like that. But there have been years where the Saints were like 29th in the league and like red zone efficiency and stuff like that. I think it's a bit of a fluky stat. So basically what I do is I measure, league average again as sort of an expected performance in the red zone as far as how many points you give up or score per red zone trip. And sort of see who's gotten particularly lucky or unlucky down there as far as red zone performance. The Texans are minus 44, that's offense and defense, over their nine games here. So you're talking about a five-point swing on a weekly basis based on their horrific red zone performance. And when I say five-point swing, I'm talking 5 points below. They are a league average team in the red zone. And obviously they have issues offensively down there because they can't create any sort of push in the run game. But I'm not sure the defense can be quite as bad as it's been. I mean, they're one of the worst red zone defenses this year. I just feel like this is a team, even though they've snuck away with some wins, and we've sort of said, boy, they have all this talent. Why aren't they winning more games? Why aren't they winning games decisively? I think you might see that in the second half this year. I think this is a team that might really, let's say, run away with the AFC South.
Yeah, red zone I always wonder about because we've talked before if it's a finicky stat. I'm impressed that you keep red zone data yourself. I'm guessing you pull that from some. You're not inserting this data and tracking it by yourself. You just happen to copy and paste a spreadsheet.
That's what I do. That's science these days, Andy. That's how run a team.
Not to nitpick, but you kind of presented it back there like you were doing a lot of the legwork.
No.
But – That's okay. You're looking. Look, I don't look at the red zone data super closely because I'm not sure if it's reflective of how the action plays. I do. Let's put it on these teams, though. I do agree with your premise, and whether it's because of the red zone or other factors, I do think Houston will be a better defense in the second half of this season than they were in the first half. Their D-line is very stout. I like their corners. Their corners can tackle, including Tyrann Mathieu outside, Matthew inside, Kareem Jackson outside. There's a playmaking element to him because of the way they're using Clowney all over. He's more of an interior rusher this year. It's a violent Texans front seven. And when you look at Washington's injury situation, Gary, I don't see how the Redskins have a prayer in this game, to be honest. I don't know how their O-line, even if it overachieves with Bill Callahan coaching the backups who are filling in across the board. Trent Williams is out in this game, and both guards are gone for the season. I don't see how you move a really good, it's not just J.J. Watt, it's a lot of guys, Reeder and Brandon Dunn, Angelo Blackson. The Texans have really good D-linemen. That's a problem for Washington.
Yeah, it just seems like one of those games. This is a good matchup for the Texans. It's not a team that's going to beat you with big plays here. They don't really have to worry that much in the back end. This seems like – and look, in Washington's defense, we've sort of, been not writing them off, but we've had pen in hand ready to write them off. And they, they've collected 6 wins to this point. But you kind of look at what they did last week. I mean, they gave up – We laughed about it, and we said, oh, my goodness, the Bucs, they had 501 yards, only scored 3 points. But you could kind of say the other way. They scored 3 points, but they had 501 yards. The Bucs rolled up 501 yards on this Redskins defense. I'm not sure you're ever going to play another team that takes the ball inside your 30-yard line 6 times and comes away with 3 points. It's just, no matter how well you play down there, that is not sustainable. That is not repeatable.
That game last week that you're talking about was 16-3, I think, was the final score. I could see this game being somewhere like that. Houston's last game was played in the teens as well, 19-17 at Denver. The defenses on both sides, especially up front, they're better than the offenses on both sides, or at least the offensive lines.
We'll see. I mean, look, like I said, you can't write Washington off because of what they've done this year, but this is a tall order this week here. Let's talk Vikings-Bears here. Let's talk defense. This Bears team, Andy, I like the defense. I don't love them like I love the Vikings defense, though.
And like
I said on Monday, and I'll let you have the mic in a moment, Andy, but I don't think they can get interceptions at the rate that they've been getting interceptions at.
Is this the moment? Am I allowed to talk now?
Now.
I was going to ask you, which defense would you rather have? And I thought that's what we're going to go back and forth on. It sounds like you're pretty clear, though, on Minnesota over Chicago. Now, is it – I know you just said you don't think Chicago can keep getting the interceptions. I happen to think they can. Their zone defense would – they play safeties back, linebackers are blurry. There's a lot of eyes on the ball, and now they have a pass rush to make the ball come out on their schedule. Do you feel is your predilection for Minnesota more about the Vikings or more about doubting the Bears?
I have slight doubt for the Bears. I like the Bears defense. I think the Bears is a B plus A minus defense. I just think the Vikings is an A defense. So I guess a little bit more the former. I just really like the Vikings.
I like the Vikings, too. I mean, they have a profile. They play cover 4, which we've talked about on the show before, but just for our listeners. So it's 2 deep safeties, but instead of those safeties rolling over the top of the cornerbacks like in cover 2, the safeties stay in the middle of the field and patrol those seam areas. So and as receivers become vertical threats against them, everyone becomes a man-to-man defender. So it's a matchup zone coverage. The Vikings in cover 4, and they do a lot of wrinkles off of it now because that's what happens when you have the same guys in the same scheme for years and years. They are extremely dangerous out of that, and the big reason why is Harrison Smith. When he gets on the weak side in cover 4, so 3 receivers to the other side, he's as good as any defender in football. He reads the field, he reads the routes. Last week I saw him in their last game on film, there was a case where he would even guard 2 guys out of the cover four. It just, you almost never see a zone defender account or any defender account for two men. It's an extremely well-coached, subtle defense. They're good on the back end. And then with Everson Griffin back and Danielle Hunter now having developed an inside pass rushing move. Remember early in the season, Zimmer said he'd be unstoppable if Hunter can develop that move. We've started to see it. So I'm probably with you. Minnesota's a defense I take here, but I am in a little bit of a – I have a crush on the Bears. Everybody knows it.
It's just because they play that really bad schedule, Andy.
Yeah, don't piss me off.
I do want to bring up one thing in this game because I'm kind of interested. So over the years in the NFC North, if you look at the offenses, you really haven't had a system, you know, the sort of misdirection heavy system like the Bears run. It's something a little bit different. It's not like the Vikings have never seen it because, you know, most teams do this to some extent now. But a misdirection heavy offense like this against a Mike Zimmer defense, I mean, does that pose any particular problems? Can you sort of use some, you know, I know this is a bit of a backhanded compliment type of thing, but, you know, sort of a smoke and mirrors type approach and end up generating some offense against this Vikings team?
Yeah, I think you can because their linebackers have been up and down in coverage and reading and reacting situations, and Anthony Barr is still out. He's actually been one of the most up and down guys. But you'd rather have Barr on the field than not on the field. So Ben Gedeon and Eric Wilson are continuing to fill in. And then Eric Kendricks has also been a little bit, by his standards, these are good players. And Kendricks especially, he's been a little bit spotty in some of his read and react stuff in pass defense this year. So I'm sure the Bears are going to try to go after that because that's the alternative is you're throwing the ball at Xavier Rhodes outside, you're throwing the ball at those safeties down the middle of the field. The way to beat Minnesota is by attacking their linebackers in coverage. So Tariq Cohen's going to be a big factor in this game.
Can I give you two more numbers from my magic spreadsheet here, Andy?
I suppose.
So I have a I call this spreadsheet NFL Luck, and I track it every year. And it's my formulas, Andy. I just want to be clear. It's my formulas. I'm just pasting in the raw data on a weekly basis. It's like a five-minute process. But I keep a couple of things. One is, you know, if you are a Football Outsiders Almanac reader, you know about fumble recovery luck. We can talk about forcing fumbles as a skill, but as far as once the ball is on the ground, that is luck as to who gets it, and teams tend to be 50-50 on that. The Vikings aren't the lowest percentage of recovery rate here. They're at 35.5, but they've had 31 fumbles in their games. They've only recovered 11. If they were 50-50, you'd be talking about five more possessions on the season for the Vikings at this point. And the other thing I track is opponent field goal percentage, and I split it up into under 50, over 50, and PATs. And as far as opposing kickers, and again, if your kicker stinks, that's kind of on you. You should get a better kicker. But as far as opponent kickers go, you play a variety over the course of the year, and you know, everyone tends to play some good kickers, play some bad kickers, etc. The Vikings opposing kickers are 21 for 23 on field goals this year. They're 19 for 19 on PATs. They are the third worst opponent kicker luck this year. So I guess my point is the Vikings, I think maybe you put them in that elite echelon at this point.
All right. That's for, you know, one area of, I think, potential growth for NFL defenses is the art of recovering the fumble. And I know it's a 50-50 proposition once the ball's on the ground, but one thing I see every week on film, and I'm raking my brain trying to remember who it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, one guy finally did what I'm about to suggest more teams can do, which is orchestrate how you recover a fumble. Because the way you're taught in football, and I remember this from when I played in junior high, I'm sure you remember my illustrious career as the eighth grade quarterback for the North Junior High Vikings. I was a two-way player. I also played whatever spot I lined up on defense.
you were just an ultra rover.
I was an ultra, and they teach ultra rovers and everybody on defense. The ball's on the ground, you yell fumble, you go get the ball. Well, so often guys on their own teams go for the ball and they cancel each other out. We see that too. We see it on interceptions sometimes. Guys both go for the ball and they wind up defending each other. I think coaches need to start dedicating time, especially, and you can do it out. You don't want to spend all day on it because you're right. Some of this stuff is a toss-up. But the art of recovering fumbles and tipped interceptions, at least understanding what the surroundings are out of your coverages. If you're in zone coverage, knowing where your help might be, defenders need to have more awareness for other defenders around them when they're going for the ball. I see too many times that guys beat each other out for the fumble and the offense winds up getting it back.
Okay. That's not bad. I mean, what do you do if you are not going for the fumble? If you think you're the second man in, are you just looking for an offensive guy to pick off?
Yeah, I think, I mean, something like the guy, again, I wish the heck I could remember because it was a really, I think it was called back by a penalty anyway, so it'd be hard to find the play. It's a really impressive play. But the guy that I saw he basically used his body to screen and create a smoother, cleaner surface for his teammate to scoop up the ball. I think you need to see more of that.
Okay. All right. We'll talk to the MMQB team about it, and we'll work on that next offsite here.
Time to go find who the guy is that I can't remember. Terrible podcast hosting here. That guy that I saw a few weeks ago that on the penalty play. Yeah, that's outstanding job by me right here. But it was a cool play. I'll remember it at 3 a.m. tonight, and I'll email you, and we can try to get to it later, I guess.
The thing about the things. All right. Steelers at Jaguars. Let's do this one. I want to focus on, we've talked about Le'Veon Bell a lot, and I don't see how you didn't hear it, but Le'Veon Bell is not going to play the season. He's going to take the year off, and we will, I don't know, we'll probably talk about it a lot this upcoming offseason. I do want to talk about the Steelers offense against this Jaguars defense, though, specifically the Jaguars defense. These teams played two really unique games last year. You had the Ben Roethlisberger 5-interception game where maybe one or two was his fault. And everyone just said Ben Roethlisberger is done because look at this box score and I don't know what happened to him after that. And then they played in the postseason, obviously, and that was when the Jaguars got out to a lead and they really went touchdown for touchdown for a good part of that game. The Steelers didn't have a problem putting up points against the Jaguars defense, though. Last week in Indianapolis, the Jaguars, we know they're talented. They blew a couple of coverages, or seemingly blew a couple of coverages, that led to Eric Ebron touchdowns. I don't know. I mean, is it a matter of people are exploiting what they do, or is this a team that's just in sort of disarray to the point where this is happening when it really shouldn't be happening, considering how long these guys have been playing together for at this point?
It's somewhere between the two. And let's put it on this game and go back to the last time we saw the Steelers. Remember early in their game against Carolina, who was it that got over? There was a Juju Smith-Schuster that got over the top. Bradbury jumped the hook route outside, and Smith-Schuster from the slot ran a sail route, and he was uncovered. Bradbury was supposed to run with that. Everyone looks at that and says, oh, Bradbury, where's your head? Get your head in the game. Well, his head was in the game. What the Steelers did on that play and what teams can theoretically do to the Jaguars, they understand the rules and when Bradbury has to take this receiver versus that receiver. And so they build their routes in a way that makes that very blurry for him. And you can't tell where one receiver begins and ends for your responsibilities and your teammates' responsibilities. The Steelers are really good at that. That's zone beater stuff is what it amounts to. And that came against that particular play on Smith-Schuster came against cover three, which is Carolina's foundation. It's also Jacksonville's foundation. So when you're a cover three defense when you're a predictable defense, which is what the Jaguars are, and I think they would tell you that, you're basing your success on your execution then, which means you're really dependent on your D-line because for you to execute, you've got to have the game being played on your schedule, not on the offense's schedule because the offense has drawn up plays that specifically blur and defeat your, in this case, your cover three. So your D-line has to get the offense off schedule so those plays don't function the way they're designed. And that's the art of football back and forth. And when teams, that's why football is such a great game because if you struggle in one area, like say your D-line's not getting home, there's going to be consequences in another area. Your cornerbacks get beat. That's the game there. And Jacksonville, by the way, in this playoff game last year, Jacksonville had a great feel for Pittsburgh's rules out of their cover three, particularly with their inside linebackers. And the Jags killed them with how they use their tight ends to exploit those cover three rules. And those linebackers didn't play very well either in response. Bostic has been really good for the Steelers, at least by what I expected of them, at inside linebacker. And I think Vince Williams has gotten better every year in that scheme. So it's a better Steelers defense this time around than the Jags saw when they were hanging 45 points on that team.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. Jaguars really have no margin for error at this point. This seems like the wrong matchup at this point.
Steelers are on the right track. I am bullish on the Steelers again. And hey, real quick, did we touch on why I was the biggest Le'Veon Bell trumpeter out there? Remember last year I was saying he's way more valuable than Gurley because the scheme is running through him and they build it around him. After seeing James Conner, I was wrong about that because Conner has been just as productive as Bell, and he's doing it through the same means that Bell did. They're running the same plays with James Conner that they ran with Le'Veon Bell. And what I've come to realize, those plays are really running back friendly. They have an athletic offensive line, and the Steelers every week, they'll commit to one or two basic run concepts, and that's their run for the week, and they execute it again and again, and they usually do it really well. With Conner, they're doing a little bit more inside zone. With Bell, mm-hmm. It was a little bit more counter where you could let him slow play it and set up his blocks with his patient running. But anyway, it's a user-friendly line for running backs, but in the passing game, the Steelers, probably better than any defense, use multiple routes to impact linebackers and underneath defenders. And so they show a linebacker a route, they make them react to it, and then the running back's route releases after that. And the result is linebackers play deeper against Pittsburgh and they play more distracted. And that's why there's all these underneath yards to be had in the passing game on dump offs and quick screens and slants for running backs. And Conner has filled that just fine because the system's giving the guy the opportunity to do it. It was not Le'Veon Bell just being a creator. The system was a lot better than I thought.
Let me ask you two things on that front, Andy. One's a comment and one's a question. You're not going to split out James Conner the way you can split out Le'Veon Bell, so that is one less option for your offense.
Hold on, can I jump you there?
Yeah.
That was true in September, but what they started doing in October, because when Bell split out, It was not wide. We think of him as a wide receiver, but it was often in empty formations into the slot on the weak side. So 3-by-2 set, he was on the 2 side along with Antonio Brown, was the other guy over there. They've continued to do that with Conner. In fact, they're running spread empty more than any team in the NFL, I think, statistically this year. So I agree with what you're saying initially, but Conner, they've gotten more comfortable with him, and now they are starting to use him that way.
My other question is, does Conner influence the defense the same way that Bell would? I mean, if you had to treat Le'Veon Bell as if he was, you know, essentially a third wide receiver out there, or you know, however many receivers, he's also a wide receiver, let's put it that way. Do teams have to treat James Conner that same way?
No, they don't. That's a good point. That's why I think whoever signs Le'Veon Bell will be getting a difference-making player because of what you just said there. And Pittsburgh's scheme, though, with all those other weapons around them, I don't think it's as big a deal. And with Roethlisberger running that show, I don't think it's as big a deal. What's also fascinating when you think about the Steelers, and it was more fascinating with the Bell being the versatile guy that you just talked about, is when they run the ball, their running concepts and their passing concepts do not overlap a whole lot. It's not like the Rams or the Niners where it all looks the same and then it's a run play or a pass play. When they line up and run, it's usually in smash mouth personnel and they just pound the rock. When they throw, they spread out and throw. They don't run or throw out of those opposite formations very much, which diminishes the return on Bell's versatility. In other words, Bell's extremely versatile, but I don't think the system was actually maximizing it as much as we thought.
Okay. No, that's a good point. They're really low in play action, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they're bottom one or two in the league, I think it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a Le'Veon Bell conversation. We will have plenty of it this upcoming offseason when we're talking about free agency, but he is not going to play this year. Before we get to the mailbag, just a reminder to subscribe to the MMQB podcast family. If you do not already, you will get Andy and I on Monday mornings. You'll get the Deep Dive Show, which you are listening to right now. You will get the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. He's joined by Connor Orr and Jenny Vrentis every Wednesday to do the news from around the league, and then we have the gambling show on Friday. That is myself, that is Scott Gramling, who is an old roommate of mine, and that is Jimmy Traina. We go through all the point spread and all that stuff. If you're into that, it's a really good show. It is a really good show, but you kind of have to be into it. I understand that. One more note.
That makes sense. That's how most good shows operate.
Yes.
The viewer and the listener, they're into it.
I would say even if you are just even if you're just a little interested in the gambling world, I think we have a good show. One more note. This is Rob from London, who is a devoted listener, had written in. He was listening to the podcast as his, hopefully not literally as his first child was born, but he did have a baby. He asked if the baby could get a shout out. I will give the baby a shout out under the understanding that this has to be the first podcast he ever listens to, and possibly the only one. I'm undecided on that, but Dylan James, welcome to the world and enjoy this podcast. Subscribe now. And also, if you see Andy or I, just give us money. That's all I got for you. You'll be fine in life. Let's go to the mailbag, though. We got time for a couple here. Well, we got time for one real one and one that Andy's not going to like. First one is from Paul. Would coaches prefer to give up yards but also create turnovers, or not give up yards but get many turnovers? Would it make a difference if the coach had an offensive or defensive background? So let's, you know, I mean, this is kind of the big question now. We are seeing offenses become more and more streamlined and more aggressive across the NFL. At this point, Andy, and we saw this with the Bengals last week. Bengals play very conservatively. They're trying to contain the Saints. It doesn't matter. You're just giving up 12-yard pass after 12-yard pass, and then you know, Terrell Austin is let go, and they have to figure out a new way to approach things. You know, Cincinnati's problem is that they don't have much of a pass rush, but if we're talking about sort of a generic team, you know, they have a C-plus talent, they have a, you know, kind of okay pass rush, kind of okay secondary. Philosophically, does it make more sense to sort of be the risk-reward defense at this point, or are you trying to just kind of hang on? And obviously, you know, offense plays into this too, but as offenses become better, what do defenses do with this one? Because I feel for so many years, defenses played very conservatively, and offenses kind of did them a favor by also playing very conservatively until the rules and various other things tipped so far in the offense's favor that they just said, you know, well, let's just go out and score 50 points.
I think football's favoring the aggressors now, and who can make who play on their schedule. As a defense, you make the offense play on your schedule when you blitz and you force their protection concepts, and the quarterback has to react to your blitz. If I'm running a defense, I'd want to play that way, which is, I guess it's high risk, high reward, but I mean, everything's high risk, high reward. In zone coverage, you're one missed tackle away from a huge gain most of the time. So I think the idea of trying to manufacture big plays through your defense, I think that's a bigger deal now than in past years. It's interesting. A lot of people right now are talking about Tom Brady, who doesn't play this week, but they have a bye. But I guess his numbers are very low against the blitz this season. But he's also the lowest blitzed quarterback in the league. Teams are afraid to go after him. So that matters in the conversation, is what do you feel comfortable doing? And so much of this stuff is quarterback driven. I just got done watching the Dolphins-Packers film. Brock Osweiler is a guy I want to play against because he is methodically slow.
Yes.
He's methodical and slow. How's that work? And he's both mentally and physically. A guy like that, you want to blitz him. You want to make him react to you. You don't want to necessarily blitz Tom Brady, even though his numbers are low, but he's not seeing many blitzes because defenses know that the risk is much greater with him. So can I say my answer is everything? I want to be able to blitz, but only against certain quarterbacks and I'm comfortable. Is that fair, or do we have to pick one or the other here?
No, I think the fact that you said you want to be the aggressor at this point, I think that leans enough in one direction to be a legitimate answer. How's that? I'll let you off the
hook. I'm fine with that. Yeah. Well, how would you play Tom Brady? Let's start it with Brady then. And it depends on your personnel. I get that. But your point personnel.
Generic team. Gosh. I'd probably play coverage and then try to, you know, catch him off guard. Because I wonder if, you know, if Brady's numbers are low against the blitz this year, is that a product of he's seeing it so sporadically that there is actually an element of surprise to an extent? So
yeah,
I know
possibly.
You really have to. I'd probably play a lot of coverage and then pick my spots. Which
the
as
teams that have
in the
had
past have gone horribly for some teams.
Yeah, well, teams that have had success against Brady tend to rush three and drop eight, and they show blitz, and but then they drop a lot of guys out of the blitz, and those guys that look like blitzers but drop back, they naturally drop into the underneath crossing routes to James White, Julian Edelman areas of the field. So that would probably be my approach to Brady. So that's the other part that gets lost. We think, well, do they blitz or do they not blitz? So much of football is played before the snap and the presentation and what you're threatening and making them do. And if you show blitz and make them have to block for the blitz, but then you drop back, that's even better than blitzing mathematically. So, and the stats don't capture that. So it's not an easy answer. It's not blitzing and not blitzing. There's so many different variables in a pass rush.
Yeah. No, well, that's a weaker answer, Andy.
Yeah, because it's smarter and more nuanced, and it wouldn't fit in a tweet or a headline.
No. It's just basically all you said is it's all a rich tapestry. That's not an answer. It is, but that's not an answer.
When you explain the tapestry, it is. I actually broke down the tapestry. I didn't say, oh, that's a rich tapestry. That'd be Skip Bayless-y of me. But when you can break it down, I think that was a quality answer. I think it's the best answer we've had on any mailbag question in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm getting defensive.
See, that's a take.
I know why.
That's a take, Andy.
Oh, that's a take. This next question is going to be about the band Chicago, isn't it?
It is. We'll find out. But I do want to mention really quick, and I hate to send people to different mediums because I know you're listening to a podcast and you're probably not also in front of a computer or scrolling through your phone at the moment. Maybe you are scrolling through your phone. But we had two articles on the MMQB this week that if you like this podcast, I just, even if you don't like this podcast, and I can't imagine you're still listening to it if you don't, but we just, Andy and I give these pieces the highest recommendation if you just like football. Jenny Vrentis wrote, this one's called Andy Reid is Creating Football's Future and Patrick Mahomes is Living It. And also we had Connor Orr. This was from, these both appeared in SI Magazine as well. If you do get the magazine, and you should subscribe to the magazine, Connor Orr was The Search to Save NFL Defenses, about some of these strange places that NFL coaches are flocking to try and solve some of the problems they're having with these sort of trickle-up concepts in offense. So those are two really good pieces. And it kind of made me think, one of the people Connor spoke to was Mike Pettine, who obviously had 2 years off, and he spent some time meeting with college coaches and sort of getting a better grip on some of these new things. But I the more I think about it, I really like the fact that the Packers are so young on the back of that defense, and on the linebacker level and the defensive back level. Because when you're talking about new wrinkles, I mean, these are not new wrinkles to these guys who just came out of the college game where they're seeing these things all the time. So, you know, yes, you want solid veteran guys. That's all good. But I think there is something to be said for having the really young guys in the defensive backfield and at the linebacker position right now in the NFL.
Yeah, that's a good point. What the Packers also do is, because those guys play so much one-on-one stuff, the coach is able to do more schematically with them because it's not as taxing for them as it might appear. It's the illusion of complexity is what you get with some of those defenses, and Pettine's always been great at that.
Yep. That is a theme in Connor's piece. Last question, Andy, is from Jared. Does Andy know what band Saul Hudson plays in, I should say?
No, not even the only. No, not. I only know of Saul Goodman, and he's not a musician. He's a television character.
He's Saul Hudson is Slash Andy. You don't know Slash at all.
Oh, is he really? That so was he wasn't born with the name Slash.
That was a gotcha moment. That's I gotta say. instead of Dylan, I think Slash would have been a pretty good name there, Rob. I think you dropped the ball on that one with your firstborn, but.
I know I'm supposed to feel embarrassed right now, but I have no emotion. I'm just wondering if I can go. Like, I have not learned anything. This was nothing enlightening. I still don't care about Slash or about Chicago or any of that stuff.
You learned what Slash's real name was. That's something. That'll be a
Saul Hudson. Is that what it is? Saul Hudson.
Yep. That'll be a Trivial Pursuit question one day or something, and you'll
get
it.
Nobody plays Trivial Pursuit. Google killed Trivial Pursuit. When's the last time anybody played that game?
Why are you Googling during Trivial Pursuit? That's cheating.
That's not how it goes. That's not. Years ago, people were impressed with the people who knew a lot of things. They knew a lot of stuff. But now we've got our phones, we've got Google, so we all have access to a lot of stuff. So those people don't impress us anymore. They're just a pain in the ass, and we don't play games with them.
Oh, I disagree. There's something to be said for recall, for using your mind, for turning your mind into your own little Google.
I like people who can use their mind proactively. Just store using your mind as storage, as basically a U-Haul of facts, isn't the same as thinking constructively and being creative.
All right. Well, that'll be for next week's show. That'll be a good off-season show. It won't be a good off-season show.
We'd have to have Malcolm Gladwell on to talk about. I mean, that's something for him and those. I mean, he's a creative thinker, by the way. I bet Gladwell doesn't sit around memorizing fun facts. He doesn't know Slash's real name.
It's why he'll never be a Jeopardy
champion. But he
knows
why Slash is a genius. Yeah, Jeopardy. Hmm.
All right, that's a wrap for the show. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who make us sound smart. Thank you, as always, to Shelby Royston and the guys at Cadence 13, who make us sound good. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. You are the best. Andy and I will be back in your feed first thing Monday morning to break down all the Sunday action. I will be back on Friday joining Jimmy Traina and Scott Gramling on the MMQB Gambling Show. You can go back one in your feed. You've got Jenny Prentice and Connor Orr joining Albert Breer to break down the biggest news from around the league. We ask that you subscribe to the MMQB Podcast Network wherever you listen to podcasts, including TheMMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Radio.com, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys, and Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.